Thanks for tuning in to the Next Level Church podcast. If you've never attended in person, we'd love to have you join us on Sunday mornings at 9:30 or 11:05 at 3105 Hampton Highway in Yorktown, Virginia. For more information, check out our website at nextlevelchurch.net.
Hey, good morning to you. Very excited to be with you today. Did you guys have a good Thanksgiving? Yeah? Very cool. Awesome. Well, my name is Rob, and I'm one of the pastors at Next Level. I'm very honored for you to be here today. And today is a little bit different. I want to actually turn this into a Thanksgiving tradition. It's something that we've done five times in the 2.5 year history of our church. But today we're going to do a live Q&A. And this is how this works. The whole talk, there's nothing prepared in advance. The whole thing is directed by you. And so I have not, every time we do this, someone asks me afterwards, did you pre-plant people in the audience to ask questions? And the answer is no. I don't have a fat clue what you're going to ask. I haven't asked anyone to text anything. This is 100% anonymous. And because of that, there's going to be a lot of ums and a lot of I don't know and a lot of I think this might be the answer. And I actually brought my Bible, the one that I use, and there may be times where I say, hey, talk amongst yourselves. Let me look in here to try to figure out an answer. But I'm going to do the best of my ability to answer your questions off the spot. And so the number is there. You can text in at any point questions. And if you hear a question or an answer and it spurs on another question, text more questions. You can text as many questions as you want. Can't promise we'll get to them all, but we'll do the best of our ability. And one other thing before we dive into questions, if this is your first time here, every week we partner with an app called YouVersion, and it's a free app that you can use, and I actually use this app daily. It's how I read the Bible. I read it on my phone in the morning, and you can actually partner with this, but there's a live section of YouVersion, and it is you can find our church in there. The steps are up there on the screen, but do a search for Next Level Church, and you can pull up YouVersion, the live page, that'll help you each week go along with the talk. Since there isn't an official talk this week, there are some things in there, a place for you to take notes, which I would encourage you to take notes. If you hear something that you like or maybe spurred on another question, take some notes. You can email that to yourself. Also on YouVersion, you can submit prayer requests that we give to our prayer team. So you can do that. If you want to give online, you can do it through that. And there's also a question of the week. So make sure you check out YouVersion. And hopefully I've stalled long enough to get a question in there. Let's see. Do we have a question? We do. Let's just jump right in there, guys. No need to wade in. Let's just jump in the deep end. Is homosexuality wrong if it is between two committed people in an exclusive relationship that is Christ-focused? Well, this question really depends on who you ask. There are people who have strong views that are different than my views, and there's people who have views that are similar to my views, and it really depends on who you ask, and there are those that are within the homosexual community that actually do research and try to pull what they think the actual intent of the verses that some of us hold to that say that homosexuality is wrong. They pull the context of those and the understanding of those, and there's actually people that have come and said, you know, we think that even though this is our understanding, we think it teaches something different. One thing that may surprise you, out of the entire Bible, the Old Testament and New Testament, there are only 6 verses that speak about homosexuality. There's only 6 in the whole thing. The Old Testament verses are tricky because the verses that say things like homosexuality is an abomination before God follow it up with also saying that seafood is an abomination before God. And so if you've eaten at Red Lobster, you're an abomination before God. And so that gets very tricky for us as Christians then, because Christians love to say, well, this is a sin, this is black and white, and then the other side comes along and says, well, if you're going to hold to that, then you better stop eating shellfish and you better start applying everything the Old Testament says. And there are clearly some verses in the Old Testament that we say those are moral laws. Those were things that were given to the children of Israel, God's chosen people at that time, that were specifically for them, that God was planting them in an environment where they had no king, they had no laws, they had no rules, and God was saying, hey, in order for you to survive, these are the things that you need to follow, and that included all sorts of rules and regulations about clothes they could wear and food that they could eat, and there are lots of instances where God said things to them that we would look back and say, you know what, that's a cultural law, that is something that doesn't apply to us. There are other things, though. The ones that do apply to us is what's called the moral law. And the moral law would be things like the Ten Commandments. The Ten Commandments is something that applies to them and it applies to us. It was not speaking just to them. And so some of the Old Testament verses get a little bit tricky because some of the Old Testament verses we've thrown out, not thrown out completely, but we've said those don't apply to us. They paint a picture of who God is and what God wanted, but it was for that specific people, and so that no longer applies to us. So then you get to the New Testament, and there's lots of different interpretations of what it means and what the verses mean. I will tell you that I think the best way that you personally can answer this question is with humility. And I think that when you come out really strong and you have a very strong opinion, very often people use the Bible to mask their hatred. And I do not think that homosexuality should be something that we have elevated above every other sin that's out there. And I think that we need to be very careful that when we come out strong against these sins, are we coming out just as strong about our own sins? Or are we really quickly to point out someone's fault and someone else's choice, someone else's wiring? Are we quick to point that out about them and ignore our struggles? And I would say at the end of the day, if you had to put me in a corner and say, just tell me what you believe, for me personally, I believe that there's enough evidence that says homosexuality is a sin. And I don't think that homosexuality is God's best plan or his best choice. But I also know through my own life that there are lots of things that I struggle with and that I do that are not God's best. And yet I didn't earn salvation. It's not because I go to church or because I'm a pastor or because I've helped an old lady walk across the road that God says, now you can get into heaven. God was able to forgive my sins and wash over them because of what his son did for me. And so I struggle with saying, okay, oh, God can forgive my sins and the times that I've lusted and the times that I've cheated, and God can forgive that, but he can't forgive this one area of sin. I struggle with that personally. And you don't have to agree with my struggle. You can disagree with me and still go to Next Level Church. I believe homosexuality is a sin, but I think Christians need to be very careful with how we address this, because here's how we're coming across into the culture. We are coming across as filled with hatred. We're coming across as very, very judgmental. And we are coming across as that there is no room for anyone that doesn't look like us, smell like us, talk like us. And I think Jesus hung out with people that would make most of us feel very uncomfortable. Jesus hung out with prostitutes, and he hung out with tax collectors, which were the worst of the worst. And he spent time with lepers. And so I think we need to be very, very careful with how we make strong, strong statements out there, especially on social media, where you can't have a dialogue with someone. One of the reasons why I wrestle with even answering this question is because I know, because I have friends that are homosexuals, I know that this is not a question that you can just answer in 5 seconds and just say, yep, you're going to hell for sure, or nope, you're not going to hell. This is something you have to wrestle with and dialogue. And I would say at the end of the day, for my friends that are homosexuals, I pray and hope that God would lead them to a different lifestyle. That is ultimately my prayer. But I am not the one to judge at the end of the day about who God's going to let into heaven or not. My prayer is that ultimately, though, any one of us, whether you're homosexual or heterosexual, ultimately that we would not find our identity in our sex choice, but we'd find our identity in Jesus. And I think at the end of the day, one of the problems that our culture gets into is we've found our identity in our labels, and so we've said, well, if I'm a homosexual, then I need to act this way, and if I'm not a homosexual, I need to act this way. And I think Christians, we're called to model and love and live like Jesus lived and loved. And so for me, I want to push people to Jesus. And I think ultimately, if there's something in my life that is a sin, I want God to lead me to choose that over my sin. And so ultimately, that's where I would want to really help lead and encourage people. But I want people to know that I'm a jacked up sinner. You're a jacked up sinner. We are all sinners. And it is not our job to, stomp on people or make people feel hated on. It is our job to point people to a God who radically loves us despite the fact that we've all sinned. You need to wrap your mind around that, because God doesn't love you less when you've sinned. And so ultimately, that's where I come to it. Yes, I believe that homosexuality is a sin, but I believe it's a sin just like gluttony is a sin. Hello. I believe it's a sin, just like stealing or gossiping or not controlling your tongue and the words that you say, it is a sin. It is ultimately not God's best for us. And so, that's where I would lead someone if they asked me, that I would let them know that God radically loves them, but ultimately he would want them to follow him over what they think their identity is in. Whew, I'm sweating. Is anyone else? It is hot in here. All right, let's see if we got another question. How do you encourage someone to hold on to faith rather than run away from it when life continues to throw more disappointment, stress, sorrow, and fear in their path? Oh, man, that's a great question. I think that ultimately what I would want to try to push someone to is whether you've had a great week or a bad week, ultimately you need Jesus. And that all of us are going to have bad weeks. All of us are going to have multiple bad weeks. All of us are going to have multiple bad days where things just don't go our way. And if you are not holding on to a faith-based relationship with Jesus and understanding that he alone is the answer to your life and to your soul's like longing, if you're not holding on to that, then the bad things that happen, they are going to throw you for a loop. But for me personally, if I know that I'm going to go through bad things no matter what, whether I'm a Christian or not a Christian, I'm going to go through bad things. For me personally, I would rather go through bad things holding on to Jesus and knowing that he's going to help me through these things than running away from him. And so I would try to, number one, listen. I think Christians do way more talking than what they should. I would try to listen to their problem, listen to their situation. I would try to let them know, hey, you can talk to me. And sometimes when people are wrestling with these things, once it gets out of their mouth, it's no longer that big of a deal. They just needed to share it with someone. So I would listen. If after they got done talking, if they wanted some encouragement, I might even try to relate and say, hey, listen, I went through a dark period when we had a miscarriage after praying for kids for years. That threw me for a loop. That was something that I had to wrestle through, and I would let them know how I felt like God held me and God held me together and helped me through that difficult situation. I would let them know that. But ultimately, I would let them know that even though you may not can see it right now, God passionately loves you and he cares for you. And I want to do everything I can to be on your side and to pray for you and let you know that God loves you. And I will tell you that ultimately when someone is hurting, God's answer almost all the time is you. And so if you know someone is hurting, one of the best things you can do is meet their needs and be a blessing to them. And you don't know how you could be an answer to something they've been praying for. This wasn't really part of the question, but I've got the mic, so I'm just going to say it anyway. There was a situation where I was out for a jog, and there was a woman in my neighborhood whose car was completely pulled over on the side of the road, completely just broke down. And I was like, I don't really have time to stop. I'm sure she's got friends, she's got family, so I just kind of jogged past it. But I couldn't just jog past it. I kept having the sense that I needed to just go back and talk to her. And this makes me feel very insecure because I know nothing about cars. I don't know how to fix cars. And I thought she was going to say, here's my problem. And I'd just be like, I don't know. You know, I don't even have AAA. I don't even know. I can't help you. But I went to her and she said that that all she needed was a tire. And I said, well, I can get you a tire. Instead of jogging, I went to the closest store I could. And I bought her a tire. And I went and I don't even really know how to put tires on cars. But I did my best to help her put the tire on the car. And I tell you all this not to give any attention to me. I tell you this just to tell you. This is what she said to me after it was all done. She said, earlier this morning, I was asking God if he was real. And I didn't know if he existed. And I said, God, if you're real, would you show me? And then he sends you to give me this tire. And I now know that God is real. So often, you are the answer to people's missing pieces. And when someone is hurting, you find a way to be that answer to prayer, to be that person for them. Go out of your way to show them love. Listen to them. Give them a hug if they want a hug. Be there to cry with if they need to cry. You be there to support them and be with them and watch how God can take even broken people and bring them into faith in God. So that's how I would answer that question. Let's keep going. I'm struggling to make sense of the Ferguson events. What is my part and how can I communicate God's love? How can we achieve racial unity? I'm glad that someone asked that question. We had a similar question in the last hour. I think that this is something that if you're here today and you are a white American, I think that this is something that you need to wrestle with because your perspective of situations in America is very different than someone that is a minority. And I think we can all agree with that. And I think at the end of the day, our response when something happens to someone else that is different than us. Our response is not judgment. It is not, this is so silly, I can't, you're overreacting. It is not to point out the flaws in their response. That the biblical response when someone is hurting is that we are called to mourn with those who mourn. And that ultimately, even if I don't understand their situation or what they're going through, I need to find some empathy inside of me to say, I don't get it because my upbringing was different and I wouldn't react that way and I don't quite understand what's going on, but my heart breaks with you because I understand you're going through something that maybe I've never even been through before. I was reading an article that really opened my eyes to this, and the article was talking about the differences between a white father's conversations with his sons and a black father's conversations with his son. And I was reading the black father's conversations with his son, and it was things that my dad never had to talk to me about. He was saying things like, and this is from a family that has a mom and a dad, a family that lives in the suburbs, and the dad was saying things to his son like, son, I want you to know that every time you leave a store, you need to leave a store with your hands wide open because someone's going to think that you're shoplifting. My dad has never said that to me, ever. He said things like, if you are running down the street, and even if you're playing tag or you're playing chase, and if you hear cop sirens, you need to stop running and start walking. My dad has never, ever had to say that to me. And so even though I may think that some of the responses were different than the way that I would respond, I need to look and say, I need to pull myself away a little bit and say, okay, I need to have some empathy here because they're definitely going through something that is very different than my upbringing or what I've went through. And I hope that when the tables are turned and when something happens to me and I'm acting in a way that just seems everyone else says is stupid, I hope that someone out there will find some empathy and say, hey, I know you're hurting. I may not agree with how you responded to this, but let me put myself in your shoes for a second and show you some empathy. I think we need some humility in the way that we deal with people. And at the end of the day, I think that we're called to mourn with those that mourn. And so even if you disagree with the outcome, or if you disagree with how people are handling a situation, we're called to mourn with them. And there is a huge portion of Americans right now that are hurting and struggling with something that they feel is unfair. And we don't have to agree with them to mourn with them. We can, though, have enough empathy to say, I'm not going to post stupid little snippets on Facebook against them or try to prove how bad this guy was or how bad the situation is or how wrong they are. I'm going to try to mourn with people that mourn, and I'm going to try to show love even in areas that I don't disagree with. And I would say that if you are, which the majority of us are here, if you are a white American, one of the best things that you could do is to truly befriend a minority. And if you don't have I'm talking about a good friend, a friend that you would go to coffee with, a friend that you would go to a meal with. If you're not friends with any minorities that you could actually have these type of conversations with, then you are cutting yourself short. And I think that a lot of times these kind of conversations, your eyes get open when you can sit down with someone and say, hey, I don't understand, but I understand that I am coming from a white perspective that was raised in the suburbs. And so can you help me understand your side of the story? And even after they explain it, I may say, yeah, I disagree, but it helped me put myself in your shoes, and I can tell that you're hurting, and I'm going to empathize with you. So I would say, ultimately, one of the best ways that we can show love is by not posting blanket statements on Facebook, but by going and befriending people that look different than us and have a different perspective than us, and truly showing them love and understanding what their upbringing is. So that's how I'd answer that question. Let's keep going. It hasn't gotten any cooler in here, by the way. If I'm a baby Christian, the bubble can be very overwhelming. Where is the best place to start in the Bible? Oh, good question. Typically, when someone is new to the Christian faith, they'll often refer to themselves like a baby Christian. So that's what this question is asking. And when someone asks me, like this person just did, my opinion, I share with them that the couple books that I would start reading, and if I was totally new and didn't know where to start, the couple that I would start with is number one, James, and I shared this a couple weeks ago. I would start with James. He is so black and white. You don't have to have a seminary degree to understand what James is saying. He's just like, do it, you idiot. And it's like, okay, I get that. Thanks, James. And so it's very clear. And so James is one that I love to, and I go back to. Another one that I think is a great one for new believers is John. It is John's account of Jesus' story. And one of the reasons why John is so important is because John writes to us. And what I mean by that is that some of the other authors of the New Testament wrote to a Jewish mindset. Like Matthew was writing to Jews that had then become Christians. And so when he writes, he doesn't explain terms or doesn't explain places. He just writes as like, you grew up in a Jewish household, you're going to know where this is. John comes at it and says, I know that I'm writing to some people that didn't grow up in Jewish households. So he'll even say, he'll give a name and he'll say, you know, Jesus called Peter Cephas, which means, and then he'll give the explanation of what Cephas means, and or Jesus went to this location and it's located near there. And so John is a great place to start if you're new and don't know where else to start. So I would go with John. I would go with James. After John, I would go to Acts, because Acts is a story of the church and how it got started, and it's an incredible book. So I would start with those three, and then ask me later when you're done with those. Let's keep going. Should Christians fight against Islam? Man, you guys are bringing the heat. I think I would need to know what you mean by fight against Islam. That's a good question. I think that if you're asking, should we get an army together to go out and to attack all Muslims and anyone that is associated with Islam, I would say no. I do not think that is what we are called to do or what we should do. If you're saying, though, that there's a cultural shift and that things are coming and pushing a certain way and it's kind of pushing away from the Christian standards, then I think that, yeah, we should feel okay and comfortable with, trying to raise, especially our kids, those of you that are parents, trying to raise our kids in a way that supports a biblical understanding of family and understanding of our world and looking through the lens. And so because I'm raising kids to have a Christian worldview, whether or not it's a fight like fist fight, it is fighting against any other belief that is anti or different than the Christian worldview. And so I would say, yeah, especially if you're a parent, you should be raising your kids to have a Christian worldview, to understand who God is and their place in the world and what God says about them and the rest of the world. But I would really wrestle with having this mindset of, we're going to go and take charge. And that's what the Crusades were about. And if you're not familiar with history, the Crusades is something that, even though I had nothing to do with the Crusades, as a pastor, I've apologized for the Crusades, of where a group of people thought they were behaving and representing God, and so they went and tried to wipe out other people. And I think that is very dangerous ground. And so I think we should fight in a sense that we're going to raise our kids to love God, and we're going to fight in the sense that we're going to love those that believe differently than us, passionately and radically, because we believe that Jesus is the way, and so we're going to fight them by loving them. And I think that love is the ultimate answer, and love is the ultimate response. And so if that's what you're talking about, then yes. If you're talking about a holy war, no. If I didn't answer your question, text in another one, because that's all I had. All right, let's keep going. How do you keep yourself on the earth if life is difficult, and help yourself stay until God says it is time to go? I think this is a question, how do you keep yourself on earth? I think this is a question maybe regarding suicide or taking your own life. If that's not it, text another question. Maybe we can get to it. I don't know how much time you guys spend on Facebook, but there was a Facebook article that went around and just got shared over and over again about the young girl who had some type of terminal brain cancer or something, and her decision was to take her life because she was about to go through some pain and go through suffering. And so her answer was to move, I think, to Portland or somewhere like that, where she could have her life medically taken. And as a Christian, I want to do my best to not play God. And if God is going to allow me on this earth, even though it's hard, to go through a difficult time for years, I don't want to say I'm going to play God and stop my life, because I don't know what God's going to do. I don't know if God's going to heal me or if God's going to use my response to pain and suffering as a way to encourage others that are suffering. I don't know what God is going to do, but I want to do my best to not play God. And I say my best because there are certain circumstances where I do kind of play God. When I have a headache, I don't just say, God, heal me of my headache. I go and I take Tylenol, and then I say, God, heal me of my headache. And so there are certain things that I do. I take medicine. I go to doctors. There are certain things that I do to receive help. But something like life or death, I would want to really wrestle with it and say, okay, maybe God has me in this situation for a significant purpose. And even though it's difficult, I want to try to hold on to my faith in God, because maybe God can use this to encourage someone else. And so, like, if that is your question, if the lady, who moved to Portland, if she was asking this question to me, I would say, I really would encourage you to hold on to life, and you don't know what God's going to do. And there have been lots of times where doctors have been wrong. And doctors have said, you're dead, and people have lived for years. And there's been lots of times where people, you know, doctors have said, you can't have kids, and God provided a kid. And there's been lots of times where doctors said, there is no hope, and God provided hope. So I'd really want to encourage you, whoever texted that, if you're going through a situation, really rely on and lean on Jesus. Every single one of us goes through difficult times. You're not alone in this, but it is way better to go through a difficult time having a deep faith in Jesus than to go through a difficult time without it. And so I would encourage you to pour into your relationship with God, pour into other Christians who can help support you when you're weak and can encourage you and help you know that you're not alone, and live this life until God takes you away. Let's keep going. I don't know if you should get baptized because my mom is not a Christian. My dad is, so what should I do? I want to follow him, but I don't even know a whole lot about it, so what should I do? Man, good question. I think this is a question that I would like to know your age. If you're in here and you're a middle schooler, and there's not really supposed to be kids in here, but if you're a kid and you snuck in and you have a cell phone, you're privileged. But if you're a kid and you've snuck in here and you have a cell phone and you text that question, I would say that we need to honor our parents in this decision process. And so I would answer it differently depending on your age. If you're here and you're a 22-year-old, 18-year-old, 19-year-old, and your parents believe different things, I would say that as an adult, then you can make that decision based off what you think God is leading you to. I think the question said, I don't even know a whole lot about it. So I think the question is saying you don't know a whole lot about baptism. So let me just quickly try to describe baptism to you the best way I understand it. Baptism is a symbol of your faith in God. Baptism does not save you. And we know this because Jesus, when he was hanging on a cross, has a conversation with another crook. And the other crook shows sympathy and empathy towards Jesus. And Jesus looks at him and says, I tell you the truth, today you will see me in heaven. And so Jesus did not say, before we die, I need to get off this cross and baptize you, and then you can get to heaven. He just said, no, because of your belief, because of your statement of belief, you'll see me in heaven today. And so baptism does not save us. Baptism is a symbol, and the best illustration I've ever heard is like a wedding ring. This wedding ring does not mean I am married. You can go out and buy a wedding ring and not be married. You know that, right? This wedding ring, though, is a symbol to other people that I'm off the market. This wedding ring is important, but it is simply a symbol. And I play with this wedding ring all the time. I'm constantly twisting it and flipping it. And if I were to lose this wedding ring, it would not mean that I'm no longer married, right? I would still be married because I had a covenant relationship with my wife. And it's the same thing with being a Christian, that baptism is a symbol. But if you haven't been baptized, that's not like Jesus is going to say, oh, man, you didn't get dunked. You're out of here. No, it is a symbol. Now, where the spiritual side of baptism comes in is because baptism is the first sign of obedience. When you have said, I'm going to follow God, I'm going to follow my life, give my life to God, we're called to obey him. And the first step of obedience is to go public with your faith before your church, and you're simply saying, hey, this is my symbol. It's like a wedding ring. I'm giving my life to God. And so when you get baptized, it is a symbol to everyone else that I've become a Christian, I'm giving my life to God. And so if you're a Christian and you haven't got baptized, I would take that step of obedience because something spiritual does happen when you obey God. And I can't quite explain it, but something spiritual does happen when you obey God, but it doesn't mean that you're saved. So hopefully in that rambling, I answered that question. Let's keep going. How do you know what God's plan is for you? How do you know what God's plan is for you? There are some instances where you know God's plan, and there's some instances where you don't know God's plan. There are some times when you don't even have to pray about it. It is God's plan for you to tell other people about him. You don't have to pray about it. You don't have to say, God, should I tell my friend about you? Should I help a neighbor out? No, it is God's plan for you to do good. Always. That's God's plan for you. So you don't have to wrestle with it or say, you know, hey, I want to help you, but let me take some time to pray about it. No, you're being disobedient. Go help them. You don't need to pray about helping people or loving people. God's plan is for you to do good and to represent him well. There are other things that you can know it is God's plan for you not to do. It is not God's plan for you to murder someone. It is not God's plan for you to steal. It is not God's plan for you to lie. It is not God's plan for you to gossip. That's not God's plan for you. In situations where it gets a little murky is when it's like, okay, I have two jobs, and which job do I take? Is it God's plan for me to take job A or job B? And I covered this last week or a couple weeks ago, in that ultimately I think God gives us a lot of freedom in those type of decisions. And in those decisions, I think God cares way more about your character than your choices. And what I mean by that is if you have two good choices, God cares more about you representing Him well in whatever choice you take than did you take the right choice. God cares way more about if you take job B and it doesn't work out, are you still going to represent God well now that you have a crummy job? He cares way more about if you chose job A and it works out great, are you still going to represent God in a way that is honoring? Are you going to get prideful because you made a good choice? And so God cares more about your heart and who you are than about the good choices. Choice A is good, choice B is good. And so ultimately, that's how I make my decisions. I go to the Bible. If the Bible tells me not to do it, I don't do it. It's not God's plan for me. If the Bible isn't clear, then I ask for some godly wisdom to try to figure it out. And then ultimately, I just go, and I just do it. And I just know that whether it ends up being great or bad, I was in God's will because I was doing what God was leading me to do, no matter the outcome. Couple more questions. Time for a couple more questions. What would you say to unmarried Christians living together as though they're married? Man, good question. I would say this is a question that is very sticky in our culture because our culture is kind of, our culture has mixed up our understanding of intimacy. And intimacy is a fancy word of sex, okay? But ultimately, sex is more than just a physical act. Sex is something that does involve intimacy, and intimacy is a closeness that you feel with another human being that you can't get any other way. It is being with someone and feeling no shame. And ultimately, in relationships, what we want is not just sex. Ultimately, what we want in a relationship is intimacy. We want to know that we can trust someone with our most embarrassing moments, and they're not going to hurt us with it. We want to know that we can trust someone and live life with them, and that we can feel secure with them. And I am convinced that intimacy is a result of commitment. You don't get intimacy by just kind of liking a person or saying we've been together for 6 weeks or 6 months. Intimacy is God's ultimate plan to be the end result of a commitment. And that's why marriage is such a great thing, because marriage, even though not all marriages work out, marriage is a seriousness to where you say, I am committed to you for the rest of my life. I'm committed to you. And the result of that commitment is the reward of intimacy. And I think that every single one of you that is married knows this, that ultimately, intimacy is the glue of a marriage relationship. It is the thing that helps bond you together. I've never, ever done counseling with a Christian couple that had a great marriage but a bad sex life. I've never done that. The two go together. Why? Because intimacy is linked with everything that you do. And this is why when your finances are going well and you're not stressed with finances, your intimacy levels go up. When you're fighting all the time, your intimacy levels go down, because intimacy is a result of commitment. And when two couples are on the same page and loving each other well and loving God well, the result, the end result, is intimacy, which is way more than just having, sex. It is ultimately a close relationship where they trust each other and they can be in front of one another and not be ashamed. Sex should never lead to regret. It should never lead to you feeling guilty. It should never lead to you saying, man, that was a bad decision. Sex should always be the glue of a relationship that is the result of you loving someone else and putting their needs ahead of you. The ultimate result is intimacy. And so I'm convinced of that, and I'm convinced of that because what I've seen in my own life. If I was a single guy, my answer might be totally different to you right now. But this is something that I've experienced, that I think intimacy is a result of commitment. And ultimate intimacy comes when you can save yourself for a relationship and commit to them fully. Now, does God forgive? Yes. But is there baggage and some things that can come with when we don't follow God's plan? I think we've all can say, yeah, we've experienced that baggage and some of those issues. And so ultimately, I think that intimacy is a result of commitment. So that's what I would say. And I would say if you're a Christian and you're living together, why not just make it official? Show her that you're committed to her by putting a ring on her finger and getting married. If you're already going to act married, you might as well make it official. Because if not, it's very easy for you to say we're acting a certain way, but there's an easy way out. And so I would say go ahead and make it official. If you're scared to get married, or if you're nervous about the person you're living with and you don't think they're the one that you're supposed to be married, well, why would you allow intimacy to be in that relationship? Because it is the end result of a committed relationship. All right, I think we have time for maybe one more question. Maybe two, depending on how long this question takes. How is cremation viewed in the eyes of God? I don't have a fat clue. I don't. I've never read a verse that talks about this. There are lots of people who have very strong opinions about cremation. Basically, the reason why I'm not afraid of cremation is because there are lots of human beings who through war or through some type of natural disaster, their body, their physical body was destroyed. And it's not like God's saying, oh, your body got blown up, your body got burned, you know, you're out of here. I personally think that cremation is a money saver. And so I'm all about getting cremated. And that's one of the things, you know, I'm hoping that when I get cremated, God's going to say, man, I'm so glad you were faithful with your money and you didn't charge up the credit cards. And not that he's like, man, why the heck did you do that? But at the end of the day, I don't think God cares, because I think ultimately we get a new body. So what we do to the body here on earth, all of our bodies, whether you get cremated or you die of natural causes, all of our bodies have a lot of work to do. And we're all going to be thankful that we get that new body when we get to heaven. And so however you decide to go, cremation or being buried in the ground, go with God. All right. This next question looks really tough. I can't answer it in a minute. Is there not a better way? That is a great question. No. Why do we preach, sing about cleansing blood of Christ when the analogy is so culturally irrelevant? Is there not a better way to present the sacrifice of Christ? There might be. I think that the blood stuff definitely gets weird if you didn't grow up in a church environment, and some of you didn't, and so the first time you came to church and they started singing about nothing but the blood, you were like, what is going on here? This is so crazy. So I get the tension of that question. I do think, though, that ultimately where every single one of us can relate and can really feel some connection to is we all love stories of sacrifice. All of us do. We love movies where someone gives up their life or where someone sacrifices for the good of others. We love to find a hero and to celebrate that. And ultimately, this whole stuff about the blood is really God's just answer to giving us a hero for what we need. And so I can relate to the fact that I needed a savior. And, you know, if someone, maybe you have this question because you already have an answer, if you can give me a better cultural way to represent that, you know, I'll wrestle with it. But for now, I think it's one of those things. I view every single one of our services as weird, okay? Everything, it's weird to sing. What other environments besides a concert do you go to and they sing for 30 minutes? Like, you didn't go to work and they say, hey, before we get to the meeting, we're going to sing. Like, it's weird, okay? Believing that God sent his son to be born in a manger through a virgin, it's weird. It is weird. So a whole bunch of everything that we do is weird. So I just know that there's going to be a lot of weird in the whole fact of being Christian and being a church. I want to, though, try, and my hope is that there'll be enough non-weird and there'll be enough answers and enough sense of God's love that anyone that comes for the first time and says, I don't understand why they sing about the blood, that was really weird, can then say, but you know what? I can really relate to that song about God making me brave because I'm scared to death of this world. And those people that were singing, they seem to have some confidence in a higher being. And so I may have thought the blood song was weird, but I really want to know more about this God that makes them brave. And so I'm going to stick around and find some answers to that. So if you have a better answer, whoever asked that question, feel free to email me and let me know. That is all the time we have, I think. I keep seeing these questions. I have a screen up here, and I keep seeing these questions, and they're really good. But what I'll do is I will collect the questions that didn't get answered, and I'll answer them on my blog this week. You don't have to read my blog every day, but hopefully by Thursday, I will answer the questions that you answered. It's robshep.com, and I'll do my best to answer them there. So sorry if we didn't have time to get to your questions. I want, though, to end by just saying a prayer over us, and we're going to end by singing. So if you guys would, just bow your heads, close your eyes, and we'll commit the rest of our time. God, we just come before you and just admit that we don't have all the answers. And we don't understand everything, and this world is an incredibly complicated place to live. And God, today, right now, I just ask that you would take answers and that you would take questions and that you wouldn't point to me as a pastor, but that, God, you would point to yourself, that ultimately, God, you are the answer for what we're going through. And God, I just ask that we wouldn't allow anything that has been said to be divisive, but that, God, this would be something that would spur on conversations. We don't have to agree with each other to love each other. And so I ask, God, that you would just work in our lives, that you would help us to continue to ask deep questions so that we get to know you more. And God, I ask that you would stir our hearts towards you. I ask that you would help us to love you and to be known by you. And God, help us to have the courage to do what you tell us to do, even when it's hard. Thank you so much for this day. In Jesus' name, amen.
We hope you've enjoyed and learned from today's podcast. If you'd like to connect with us further, you can check out our website, nextlevelchurch.net, or find us on Facebook or Twitter.